I'm here at Braille 200 with Emma Tracy, who is a Braille user. She is also the host of a podcast on BBC called Access All. Hi, Emma.
Hello, Barry.
And most people probably don't know, a long time ago when the radio station first started, you were one of the first presenters, weren't you, at RNIB Connect Radio, although it wasn't called that then.
No, it was called VIP On Air, so it's been through a couple of iterations since. It was 21 years ago. I was there for 3 weeks, and within that 3 weeks, I presented a two-hour live program. So they really did throw me in at the deep end. But it was one of those things that helped me fall in love with presenting and with the live aspect of presenting and having to just get on with it. And whatever you said was said, and that was it. I actually got a really big buzz from that, and it really stayed with me through my career, actually.
So it was a good grounding.
It was a really good grounding, yeah.
And you were using Braille even back then, weren't you? But was it the Perkins back then?
So back then I might have used a little bit less, because what happened, and it happens to a lot of people, is I sort of fell out with Braille slightly in my late teens, early 20s, because JAWS screen reader and other screen readers came in, and we thought these things were the bee's knees. So I grew up in Ireland, and we weren't given Braille displays as part of the course. So I relied very much on speech at that point. But what I've actually realised since, so I've started using Braille displays, and that was fine, which is the electronic way of reading Braille. But sometimes technology lets you down. And I was doing a live show at the Edinburgh Festival a couple of years ago in the BBC tent. And my fellow sighted presenter was using cue cards. So, you know, like Graham Norton has the big cards that he reads from.
Were they a game changer?
And I had to do cue cards for my section because they had the branding on, and, you know, we wanted to look the same. So we both had cue cards. And I realised that this was the future for me, and it was a game changer because I didn't have to rely on technology. I find it hard to read Braille quickly enough to read my entire script, but with cue cards, it's bullet points and it's little questions and little sort of nods to things and things to jog your memory and things to ask. So now every podcast I do, every week, I take the script and I sit down and I write my cue cards with my Perkins Brailler, the old typewriter. And everybody in the office can hear me. And because I'm now in my 40s, I don't care. Really don't care. I really love the Perkins. I love to have it on paper in front of me. It's my own shorthand. I don't think even another blind person would be able to read what I'd actually written. But it suits me. And it makes my job easier. And it takes a lot off my plate not to be worrying about whether the technology's going to fail or not. So I've gone right back to the equivalent of pen and paper, or even pencil and paper, and
I'm
delighted. Yes, and but Braille is I've fallen in love with Braille again.
And 200 years of Braille is quite a fitting tribute today, isn't it?
It's lovely, and it's really nice to see so many MSPs here and so many people interested. It's really nice to get lots of blind people into the Scottish Parliament to see what it's like and to feel what it's like, because they've all, you know, listened to it on the radio and heard a lot about it. But to be actually in the rooms is so special. Really nice to have the French consulate as well. And really funny, you know, he was saying that how it's difficult for him to say Braille because actually it's Bri. And we're all just like, maybe we should be saying Bri.
I also thought it was difficult for him to pronounce Louis.
I think his way is the real way.
Yep, probably.
I think so.
Maybe. Yes, so the future of Braille is in a good place.
Yes, I think so. I think so. But I think it is in a good place, but I think we're all responsible for keeping it in a good place. So, you know, as Sue said in her speech, Sue Marshall, who's been teaching Braille for 30 years, she said, you know, pharmacists, do not put your stickers over the Braille that's on a box of medication. Because if you put the sticker with the information on in print over the Braille, that can't be read, because we need to be able to feel the height of the dots, and we need to be able to feel the dots on the boxes. So it's very much on pharmacists not to do that. It's not all about pharmacists though, obviously. It's also on education establishments and government to make sure that Braille is available to everybody who needs it and in any way that they want to use it. So if that's in books for small blind children, if that's in song lyrics for women and men in care homes, if that's on a Braille display on a piece of paper, if it's about learning how to write into your phone in Braille. There's something called Braille screen input where you can use your, I'm doing it on the table by the way, where you can use your fingers on your screen to write in Braille, which is another privacy thing because a lot of blind people find touch typing really difficult, and then you want to dictate but you don't want people to hear. Like if I'm putting in a message, one of my kids will be like, oh really, what? And I'm like, no, I didn't want you to know about that. So there's so many different ways for Braille to be available in the world, and if you think that you might want to put Braille on something, do it. If you think that a child is struggling in school to read with their eyes and it's causing them headaches and bad posture, suggest that they learn Braille so that they have that, so they can run down when they have children in the middle of the night and grab the bottle of paracetamol and know what it is, and don't give them, you know, cough mixture instead. You know, that's, it's those little things, so that you can play cards on a train, so you can play board games with your children, so that you can label your spices and your tins. You know, again, I'm going to quote Sue Marshall, said that she put cherries in her lasagna because the tins weren't labeled properly. Tins feel the same, every single one. And yes, you can get your phone out and you can use your phone to read the barcode or to scan what's on the tin, but it takes ages. And if you're totally blind like me, it's quite hard to line it up. And you might be listening to a podcast on your phone, or you might be using it as a baby monitor. You might be doing something else with it. So just having the freedom and the privacy to have things in Braille so that you individually, and only you, and you where it's most important, can access that thing that you need to access in a hurry, and it's Brailled there for you. And that's so, so important. And I'm so passionate about it because I think it's so arrogant for the people who say that Braille is on the way out and it's too big and bulky and it's too expensive to produce, it's too hard to learn. You don't understand the benefits of just having, even if you only use Braille once a week to read your child a story or to read your grandchild a story, that is enough. You know, that is enough. It's enough to have that, and Braille is so important.
Well, listen, it's been a pleasure talking to you. How can people find your podcast, Emma?
It's called Access All. It's the BBC's weekly disability and mental health podcast from BBC News, and it's available on BBC Sounds or wherever you get your podcasts.
Emma Tracy, thanks for your time on RNIB Connect Radio, and enjoy the rest of the event.
Thanks for having me.